We're talking with Eddie Brown, whose story is the definition of achieving the American dream, from a middle-class upbringing to overseeing billions for some of the nation's wealthiest family. Eddie Brown's journey is truly inspiring. He's been nationally recognized as a leading advisor in the family office sector, the chief growth officer for Pathstone, and a trusted voice for high net worth individuals. Join us as we uncover the secrets to Eddie Brown's incredible success, his insights on wealth management, and how he's disrupting the world of finance. Get ready to be inspired.
Today, I'm particularly excited because I've got a good friend in front of me. His name's Eddie Brown. Chief!
Whoa!
Growth officer.
Love that. Family Love office. That, Bruce.
Yeah. The reason why I'm so passionate about this is it's similar to what we do in our in our day jobs, is what I always call it. And there's been this great movement towards family offices. And we'll dive into that a little bit later. But Eddie's been a friend of mine through some interesting times. And I'm so excited to tell his story about not just you personally, because that's where I feel, you know,
we have a deep connection. We
correct.
Absolutely do. Yeah.
And friendship.
Yeah.
But to talk at a very high level and at a micro level, but where the industry is going. So, Eddie, first of all, thanks for coming.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. This is an incredible set, and congratulations on Disruptors. This is incredible.
Well,
yeah,
can't be more excited.
Yeah,
I want to dive into it right away. You and I came from similar backgrounds. We were your proverbial Wall Street guys.
Oh, yeah.
Men.
Boring, conservative.
We loved it, though.
Yeah,
suits,
we did.
You know, the ties, the whole bit. We looked pretty cool back then.
Absolutely, we did, yeah.
Just kind of guide us through a little bit of your career, because it's going to explain the evolution of where you've come from and where you are today. So, first of all, just walk me through. Just 5 minutes.
Yeah, Bruce, happy to do that. And, you know, it was a typical kind of traditional going through college. You need to get a job, right? When you get out of college. And I didn't know if it was going to be financial services or what it would be, but landed a job in a bank. And in that bank, became a private banker, enjoyed that, enjoyed the relationship side of it. Started to learn about trust and estates and all this, these, you know, fancy acronyms like, you know, the ILIT and all these different strategies. I was like, this is pretty cool. I can actually do this. And then joined Smith Barney and Smith Barney Citigroup. You know, a major institution at a wirehouse. And I knew I was never done, but the thing I always have loved about our industry is it's a people business and it's a trust business. So after working through Smith Barney, had the opportunity to work for Fidelity. And then before joining Pathstone, I was with Schwab and built out their family office business. So I've always had this entrepreneurial itch with inside of large corporations. And finally, I was able to scratch that itch with a company that I have admired deeply since they launched in 2010. And it's a pleasure to be here. This makes me happy just seeing this on the board.
Oh,
here.
That's cool. So,
yeah.
Schwab, just for a moment, how big were they when you started and you left them in pretty good state?
Yeah.
They're fairly large organizations.
Well, Schwab wasn't known for the ultra high net worth business.
Correct.
You know, it was all about disrupting, you know, Wall Street. And that's, and you talk about disruptor, think about Chuck Schwab. There was definitely more opportunities over the years to create something that was more focused on ultra net worth and family office. But Schwab wasn't known for that. So when I learned that they were committed to a strategy to build a business within the business to focus on ultra net worth and family office, it was something I was running to. After a really great run at Fidelity. So being able to create that business, bring it from zero to $200 billion in 6.5 years and have an incredible winning team, it's one of the highlights of my career, certainly.
So let's transition from
that. Yeah.
So here you are at Schwab, you're $200 billion. Most people go, tap the mat, I'm out. This is going to be a great place for me to retire. I mean, you obviously have the gravitas and the favor of Schwab loving you and you loving all the people there, because I've never heard anything but just great things coming from them. And that's why we initially connected,
because
our business was very connected to Schwab. Now you get involved with Pathstone. Mm-hmm. Kind of walk me through that process and kind of give me an idea of the founder of Pathstone, how they connected with you. Because I know for a fact you were called by many, as anyone who's an executive of any one of these large institutions, okay? Sure. Yeah. So you don't take every call. So kind of why Pathstone? Who's the founder? What's the vision there? Mm. I know I acted a lot.
You did. I got to unpack that. Those three questions in one. I think I can handle it, though.
Okay, good.
I don't have notes like you have.
No, I have to have notes because I'm far dumber than you are. But
that is not true. But now, getting back to the question. Yeah, it's a good point. You know, when you have a winning team and a winning business with a winning company, the easy thing for me to do would be just to sit exactly where I was and continue to grow the business. And $200 billion seems like a lot. But there's a lot more wealth out there that could be created and built in that business. So my perception was I needed to grow and disrupt myself. And instead of doing what was comfortable in a great company with a great team, is to go to where I thought the business was heading, in a firm that I believe has really disrupted in many ways the industry and how ultra net worth clients are served. And my story about Steve Braverman, you know, the founder. Oh, yeah, right. The founders. It was founded by Steve Braverman, Alan Zachariah, and Matt Fleissig. I was in Atlanta, and in Atlanta, you start getting connected with the family office community, and at least five people said, you have to meet whatever they're doing at Pathstone. It's really interesting. After a couple missteps of going to the wrong place and just not getting calendars aligned, because we were very busy and very important. Right. But we met and I heard their vision of starting with 19 families that are very prominent families and building out just a suite of services and the things that really matter to those families. It was a great origin story from the very beginning. So I've been a partner with them since they've launched in one capacity or another. I've referred business to them. I've admired what they've built and their growth. So to be able to take what I'm have done in my experiences, enjoying great people, doing some great things, and having great impact. It became a no-brainer. But I was not taking any calls. And you know, corporations go through their own kind of organizational alignment and changes. And comes a point when you start, you know, rising up in that corporate ladder that you're no longer in control of your own destiny. And so that's why I made the move.
So you have 19 families, but you've grown. How many families you kind of manage now, and how much money?
I mean, fast forward, it's incredible and very intentional about the types of families they serve. All throughout there, and it stayed really true to the essence of what they built the business on, the original foundation. Today, it's over 700 families. Average family has about 100 million or more.
Spread throughout the United States?
All throughout the United States.
Is it global in nature? I mean, do you have international clients? Well, primarily the United States.
With that level of wealth, they have global interest and different domiciles across the world. Primarily, it's all domestic-based business for us.
So I have this saying.
Yeah. Uh-oh, here we go.
You're right.
You're going to drop it.
I'm going to drop it right now. But I always call it new levels, new devils.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Mm. So it's one thing to grow the business from 19 families to now the 700.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That CAGR is pretty impressive. Yeah. All right. You became the chief growth officer at $160 billion. And you told me something the other day, I think we were working out or whatever the case may be, that just blew my mind. You said, you know, Bruce, aspirationally, I'd like to take this company to $1 trillion in assets under management.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, for those that are viewing in the audience, $1 trillion. All right. First of all, it's a lot of money. I get that. But maybe take two steps back and talk about the independent space.
Yeah.
The moat that's being created in family offices and why people are using family assets. Just maybe spend a few moments on that. But how did you come up with that number, $1 trillion? And give me a broad perspective of what that industry right now looks like today and where it's come from.
Yeah, well, Bruce, all the time we spend at the gym, you know, we get fired up about things like we get fired up about things of let's 5X this thing. Let's 5X ourselves. Yeah. And, you know, the math isn't too far off, not too great at math, but math isn't too far off from 5Xing where we are today. Correct. To a trillion. But that's not where the number came from. You know, the independent industry has been a cottage industry, started 30, 40 years ago. In fact, Schwab helped kind of get it launched. And just like individuals and professionals like you, you saw the benefits of being independent and having your own RIA.
That is now evolving a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it feels like it's evolving daily now due to, you know, even early onset, a lot of people are talking about AI, you know, fintech technology. Yeah. Does Pathstone kind of embrace all that stuff?
Well, I want to get back to the to the number, because when you see every day you look at the headlines, you're like, this firm's buying this firm or these firms are combining. In the industry, we see it every day. Like, if we don't see it, we think that something's wrong. So there's been, I mean, one of the major trends is just the acquisitions and the combination of firms over that. So that's going to help propel the overall industry and the size. And Pathstone has combined some great firms to help get to that level of assets. But the reason why I think it matters is scale allows you, Bruce, and you know this, right?
Yeah.
Allows you to invest in technology, right? You have to have the best of technology combined with the best of the people in the business that are providing these services in such a way that it meets the, you know, growing expectations of these complex families. You have to do that. So size in many ways and scale flies in the face of customization and personalization of how you serve families, but it's necessary today. You have to have it. So you have to get bigger. You have to bring in more resources to be able to support all these needs. So at the trillion number, it would be fun to get to. I actually see there'll probably be 8 to 10 firms. There's probably a race to a trillion in many ways. But think of the size relative to some of the private banks out there. And, you know, their businesses are 3-4 trillion. So plenty of runway ahead to get to it. But there'll be a concentration of probably 8 to 10 large RIAs that control $1 trillion.
And that's where the race has begun.
Yeah, I think the race begins there. And, you know, something that's kind of pure to Pathstone is that niche of, you know, being laser focused on the type of client that we can bring together things together. And those are clients with 100 million or more. So that makes it even harder.
So culturally, Pathstone's incredibly engaged in that aspect of it. Because at 160 billion, if you're growing even at 10%, 15, 20% a year, maintaining that culture is incredibly important.
Yeah. Culture is everything, right? Culture is everything. And I think it's overused in our industry.
Yeah.
I've overused it as people first culture, but most people don't really define and they're not intentional about what culture means. And I have learned, and, you know, one of my, you know, thoughts in joining Pathstone was we've combined all of these entrepreneurs. You're an entrepreneur, right? All of these successful,
a very good-looking entrepreneur, if I may say.
Those glasses are sweet.
That's totally hot. I get it. Totally, 1,000%.
It's very distracting.
No,
actually.
I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we should just darken this side of the room, okay? So that it just becomes a shadow.
We need to. There's a lot of lights in here. Yeah, there's a lot of lights. Oh man. Man, it's always so much fun talking to you, Bruce.
Yeah. No.
You know, the you know, just the thought of what it is to bring together a bunch of successful culture. Entrepreneurial led, you could imagine that could be a disaster, right? And what I've learned in my, you know, second month here is I've met these entrepreneurs that have combined and they all have like aligned values and cultural values. So we're, you know, you have to be very intentional. There's firms that want to acquire just for speed to get the bigger number.
And I've seen that. And that's why I'm asking those pointed questions because when I see these things, attaching just advisors to a larger practice, I don't think in the long run really works, to be candid with
you.
No, it doesn't. Because you're not buying into a culture. You're just being bought. And I've seen that. And so, you know, I know culture is very important to you. And I know being emotionally connected is very important to you. And so that's ultimately what attracted you at, you know, at this Pathstone.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely did. And I think it's, you know, one of admiration for what they've done and what they've built. But for me, it was values alignment, and I see how they. I referred clients to them, and I see how they take care of them, and You know, they've got foresight, like, and what is next and what kind of services will they need? And because, you know, you get smarter like AI every day when you have a situation with a client, and serving those clients, continues to catapult. And then, you know, really just having empathy. I mean, people don't understand that, you know, we're not just a bunch of number people, you know, analysts, all that. You need that. You need that expertise, but that whole emotional quality side of things. I love the empathy they've shown their clients, and they're resourceful. They're resourceful as a startup CEO, really.
Do you educate people who want to start family offices on how to become a family office? And now, I was recently talking to an individual about family offices and the meaning of family offices. Why are they growing so much today? Because this traditional way of getting advice in the past was an individual would go to an advisor. Yeah. They would then, you know, do the proverbial stocks and bonds and, you know, and alternatives and so forth. I get that. But now people are becoming a lot more intentional about their wealth and where they want to go with it. Yeah. So why family office?
I think family office itself, mm-hmm. even if you ask people in the industry, 100 people have 100 different definitions of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the attraction, some think of it as almost like an ego. Like I got my, you know, I sold my company.
Sure.
Right. And my buddy has a family office. I need one. But the reality is a family office structure, you know, has an intentional group of people, you know, a single family office. They hire their own people in house. They want to take care of it. A multifamily office is really a single family office for multifamily. Different households and being able to combine all those resources together. So, I mean, I think it will continue. I mean, with the wealth creation every day, right, in the U.S., which is super exciting to be a part of, like that model is a winning model to serve the complex needs of these families that is getting more and more complex each day. So there's different types of family offices. All will be successful and play a role in that. And then our space and what, you know, we do and your firm does is really try to bring all those resources and give them access, right, to what they need. Yeah. And ultimately just be that, you know, that first call. Like when you're in trouble, right?
Right.
You have a first call, you have a friend.
Yeah, I'm in trouble often. So yeah. I have to have many friends.
But the best advisors, I want to be in the top five of your first calls.
I could be calling you every day.
Yeah. but the best advisors and the best friends, right?
Yeah.
They're there when you need them. And of course, you're going to get the truth. It's not always going to be, you know, make you feel good, but you're going to get the truth. And you're going to get what you need, right? And being that first call is really critical. So family offices in many ways are that first call for these families, no matter good, bad, you know, divorce, ugly stuff, whatever it may be.
Right.
Or
aspirational things.
Or shit. I just sold my company for $150 million. I have no idea what to do with this wealth and what it's going to do to my kids. Like it's hard.
Is that just peeling that back, that onion a little bit.
Yeah.
Are kids' dynamics with the family office a big function of how Pathstone works? I mean, you're dealing with multi-generation. Something you guys do specialize in?
You have to, and I think whether it's in-house within Pathstone, which we have in-house individuals that will sit down with you and, you know, what is the purpose of your wealth, you know, Mr. Lee, and what is a preferred life for you? Like you hit it big, right?
Yeah.
Now what?
Yeah.
And then how can we create that time and space to bring in the family and understand what this means to them to, you know, really live more of their preferred life later, right? You got to have the functional expertise. You got to do investments. You got to do tax. You got to do a lot of other stuff, but it's that other side, like educating that generation and bringing them in the fold. It's hard.
Do you think lifestyle is becoming more important of that discussion? You know, I've often said, you know, I had a little bit of a health scare, you know, health is wealth. Yeah. It's something that I embrace quite a bit. How much does lifestyle now play into the narrative of your company?
Well, lifestyle, and you know, you've inspired me and what you've done. And I know that just us being together and spending time at the gym at 6 a.m. When other people may be sleeping, it's always been fun. But lifestyle, I think, means everything, right? And it may be that moment that hits you, like a health scare. It may be a death in the family.
No.
It may be, something positive, like a liquidity event. I haven't won the lottery, but I'm still hoping that I one day hit the lottery. Actually, I already have them on your show. So, but I think that the beauty of that is how do you outsource like the administrative burdens of, a high net worth?
Is that a real key issue?
Yeah, outsource it. Yeah.
They just don't want to deal with
it. Personal. I mean, imagine, right? Time's your most valuable asset, right? Imagine if you got more time back and you didn't have to deal with all the administrative burden of things and calling service providers and making sure your second home, the electricity's on, when you get there, all those things. So, outsourcing that, just think about like less hassle, more joy. And maybe it takes that one moment to realize that, I'm focused on the wrong things. So
you're dealing with all these business verticals. Yeah. You're the chief growth officer.
Yeah.
You're going to take this thing to its next chapter.
Yeah.
Maybe just spend 20 or 30 seconds. What are some of the headwinds, tailwinds that you're seeing in the course of the next couple of years? Some of the challenges that you're seeing to kind of get to that next level?
Yeah. Well, I think, one is just the growing complexity of these families. I've spoken about it. So continue to create services in-house that can help them meet their needs. I think the other is, and many people think of like competitors. Our firms, could compete for the same type of business, right?
Yeah.
But you see us sitting here together and we're collaborating. So the difference of competition versus collaborating with the right partners.
I'm going to bring it to sports, but yes. Keep
yeah, you probably. You probably
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah.
I mean, particularly looking like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. The fur, gives it away without question. Yeah, no, I got it.
Did you get that new, by the
no,
way?
Okay, stop.
Yeah. So I think that's another one. So think of collaboration versus competition. So I think that's a big one. And then technology. I mean, if you're not embracing technology, right? And technology is more than just AI and ChatGPT and all those things. I'm talking about technology to automate the simple in your operation to be able to focus on higher value interactions with your clients. So, and by the way, I think you and I have talked about it. If you're not using AI in some form or fashion, you're already behind, right?
Yeah,
you're already behind.
Here's the way I frame it.
Yeah.
AI is not going to replace the advisor.
Yeah.
But the advisor that uses AI will replace the advisor.
Oh, that doesn't. That is so well said.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So if you're not using those tools, you're done.
Yeah, you're done already.
Yeah.
You're done already.
So that's why we're moving today at warp speed, because the rate of change is so incredible.
Yes, it really.
You've talked a lot about the structural issues of Pathstone and why you've made, the transition there. And you gave us some really good insights on the business. Really appreciate that. Yeah. But. This is a segment of the program that I call the feels.
Mm.
Okay. Because I said this to you the other day when we went to the gym, I said, man, you have a different step to you. You have a different level of enthusiasm. And this doesn't take away from your old predecessor organization.
No, absolutely not.
You're energized.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I am of the belief that if you don't walk into your career with a sense of enthusiasm, with a sense of passion, then it's just a job. So I wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about kind of your feels, man.
Deep here.
Well, you've talked about a few things that I never thought of before. One, you have an executive coach, and I thought, okay, I have a trainer for the workouts.
Yeah.
But you talked about, your coaching is such a pivotal area on how you think about leadership. I want to also know the Eddie Brown, because I don't know if this translates on the camera or whatever, but you're also a very passionate family man, and you're not only a good friend. Just walk me through some of the, make you 3D to me is what I'm trying to say. Do you get where I'm going with that?
This is like taking a relationship to the next level.
Yeah, for sure.
But I appreciate that. Yeah. And I think that, first of all, I love to work.
Yeah.
And I love to love people and in a people business.
That's obvious.
And when you can bring good energy into a room and light it up and make people feel better about themselves, I mean, that's just who I am. And we have the same trainer, Michael Barrett, right? And you have him with you for accountability, for techniques, all of these different things. So, I mean, why would you not? I think in some ways it may be just ego that may be getting in the way of, I've got it all figured out. Like, I've got all these decades of experience. Why would I need somebody to tell me what to do?
But my realization, I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I know you were. I was reading your mind. I was reading your mind. But for me, I could tell you, Mark David, my executive coach, has been transformational.
Really?
Let's think about it. He's 78 years old.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He can bench press 300 pounds, right? So that's impressive in and of its own. But he has such a lead on experiences and working with executives that there's no way I have his knowledge. So he's at this, he's got a vantage point that he can pour into me. And he always says to me, he's like, Eddie, you know, the more you are you, the more you will do. Okay. And the focus of it is really understanding who you are and knowing yourself. Not about the good stuff, but also your blind spots as a person. So if you're going to be a leader, you have to keep learning. You have to keep growing. You got to show up, right? You're showing up for your people, right? And if you're learning and growing and they see that, they feel it, man. And I just, I
so
absolutely
he's your Yoda.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You're the Padawan. I mean, he's your Yoda.
I did like a whole day with him in San Francisco. I left.
Oh, that's intense.
Yeah. I left. I mean, some of it was, you know, what is your purpose? And you're like, wow, I've never really thought about my purpose.
Yeah.
But we wrote it out, right? You know, and, you know, what matters to you? What matters to you today? So all this stuff. So I
don't
left.
Don't leave me hanging. But give me some tidbits.
Well,
I'll
tell you.
What's your purpose?
You want to know my purpose?
Yeah.
All right. I'll
Sometimes
it
for me, it's just eating a good lunch. But go ahead.
I'll give it to you. And this is more business purpose because
Okay, great. Obviously,
you know, spirituality, you know, my family, all of those things that have inspired me and kind of made me who I am is foundational. And that's who I am. But, you know, by knowing myself first, Bruce, live as a visionary leader. So see more than before. Be a courageous change agent. And it's hard when you're corporate America
100%.
To be a change agent, right?
Too many people are afraid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes when you get into a corporate environment, I have this phrase, right? You're either a taker or you're a giver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so those who take, I call them energy vampires. They don't know how to make decisions. They just take and then they push paper around.
Yeah.
And then those who, it kills those who are givers.
Oh, crazy. Yeah.
So, but in order to have the courage to do that chance,
yes,
you have to rise above all that stuff.
Yeah. I want to get back to the energy.
Yeah, please.
Because I love that. And I'm going to use that in many conversations.
Good.
And but I'll attribute it to you. But
please.
You know, by knowing myself first, be a visionary leader, courageous change agent for the significant impact for the good of others in the industry. I mean, that's simple. Like, it's not about self anymore. You know, self is about you can be successful, but how do you become significant? For me, I need to really lean in on what my purpose is and then have a strategy and a discipline, right? To do that and really live my movie and my purpose every day.
That's really cool.
I left that meeting, by the way. I thought I had a superpower, man. I started looking around. I'm like, I'm going to use energy vampire. That's an energy vampire, right? That's an energy light. That's the person I want to be around because they want to get better. And I get better when I'm around them and I get inspired. So, you know, finding out those people in your life and knowing your purpose, game changer.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because what I think is kind of interesting is for people who are not in the industry,
yeah,
you got a company that's at $160 billion that could be kind of resting on its laurels. I mean, if you think about the S&P 500 growing at around 10% a year, you're going to just have natural growth in it within itself.
Oh, absolutely. 12-15%.
So for them to accept this concept of you being able to go in and break glass, make changes to take you to the next level, that's admirable.
Well, you know, I see Matt Fleisig is the CEO. Kelly Maraney is the president, and they have done an incredible job of building the business and the structure that's in place today. The reality is the corporate experience that, you know, we appreciate is going to create a whole new lens to be able to help them get it to the next level. And that's what I love about it because, you know, it's a right fit at the right time with the right company. Let's go, Bruce. Come on.
All right.
I'm
going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Now I'm just telling you right now.
All right.
Are there any inspirational individuals, speakers, quotes that you would, that come to mind that kind of keep that energy level high? I know we didn't talk about this, but is there anybody out there like any quotes?
There's
I mean, give me one that you get up in the morning, you go, boom, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go with Vince Lombardi, right? Okay. You know, winning is not a one-time thing. It's an all-the-time thing, right? I think that is just a great quote. And it's talking about, you know, winning is a habit, right? Unfortunately, so is losing. I don't want to lose, right? I want to win. I want to be our winners. And the reason, well, there's two reasons why I love this one, Vince Lombardi. First of all, he was a coach of my team who's still in the running, the Washington Commanders / Redskins, which I'm excited about.
No, I'm excited.
I know. Just
only talked about it 100 times.
I know. Okay. But the other thing is my dad passed away 2017. And when he passed, he had that quote in his office. And okay. I should laminate it or something. It looks, you know, like it's, you know, been around for, you know, 40, 50 years, but I have it with me. When I open up a new office, I have it there with me. And I just love that. And he you know, he's inspired me. John Maxwell, leadership guru, right? He's 78 years old, man. That guy gets fired up every day. He's going to write 100 books.
Love that.
Have you met him?
No.
Have you read any of his books?
No.
Do you read it all?
No.
Okay, great. but you know, he both on the spiritual side as well as on the leadership side, man, he is incredible. I listen to this podcast every day.
You know, Eddie, I want to segue to something in Fields, because you said something to me a while back that you did, and I didn't really quite understand it, but when you did it, it was transformational, and I think it was a big pivot. Remind me, it was called 75 Hard.
Yeah.
What is 75 Hard? Just walk through that with me for a minute. And why was that so transformational for you and your family?
Yeah.
It impacted me too as well.
Yeah, it came and looked, my reverse mentor, one of my best friends and somebody that inspires me is my son, Nick Brown. And you've met Nick. Yeah, Nick at you know, around the gym. And he said, Dad, we got to do 75 hard thing. And I was like, well, tell me what it is. And he goes, well, it's two workouts a day, different, you know, 45 minutes on the inside, 45 minutes outside. You got to read. You got to stop drinking alcohol. You got, and I was like, this sounds just awful, right?
It's probably why I avoided you for 75 days.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So I was concerned. And I remember the day I was in the pool with my wife and son. And Nick looked at my wife, Wendy, who's awesome. She's always been a great supporter of everything. And she said, Nick, I'm not sure Dad will do it. And I thought, for sure, maybe it's because I, you know, travel on business and have a drink here or there. And she said, no, Dad, just, he won't be able to get home in time to do a second workout. But the reason why I bring up that 75 hard is that was something we did as a family. And it was hard. It was discipline every day, nutrition, read, you know, 15 minutes a day. And then you got to take a picture of yourself at the end of the day to see the transformation, you know, of your body and health. But the reason why that was transformational.
Does the 75, is that like a kind of a club? Does everyone share these photos of transformation, or is it just?
No, it's Andy Frisella who started it. Correct. And they've got an app for it. Of course, there's an app for everything to be able to do that. But check it out. But I think, you know, it's all about, you know, having discipline, doing things consistently. In fact, I, you know, brought that over to my team at Schwab and did the Power Five.
You definitely felt that took you to another level.
Oh, it took me to a whole new level. I mean, as a family, it took us to accomplish something like that together.
That's huge.
It was incredible. And then how do you translate the learnings of consistency compounding to what you do each day at work? So we
agree. And that feeds into this.
Oh, yeah. The Power Five. Like, we know what we need to do each day as a business, reach our goals, you know, all of those things, reach our personal, professional, our business goals. So I'm pouring that over of those five things, the Power of Five.
Yeah. That's really where you kind of evolved to the 5X idea too as well. You know, like, let's 5Xers.
Yeah, it just multiplied
itself.
Hey, it all started there. And that's why we're getting all fired up at the gym. You know, let's 5X.
Sure. Let's go. Yeah. All right. Listen, Eddie, I just want to tell you, I could talk to you for hours. You know, and I'm really happy that you kind of gave me some insight. I've always really admired you from close up and to afar. Mm-hmm. You've had an unbelievable career. I can't wish, you know, as much success as possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to look forward to seeing that $1 trillion number, because I know you can do it.
Yeah. Right. I appreciate that, bro. Good to see you, man. Good to see you. Great to spend time with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some work to do.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do it.
All right.
All right, man.
Hey, congrats to you.
Yeah, thanks.
Changing the game, shattering expectations, rewriting the rules. Meet the new visionaries, the rebels, the ones who dare to disrupt.
When you're on a show like this, we're always talking about disruption. And when you're talking about disruptive natures of any business, you're talking about innovation.
The way that this is transforming is people want an actual connection with the person that they're listening to, because we're so used to being online that it feels like you're talking to a friend. You don't want it to be so formal.
In fact, I've often said, grass is hard to grow under big trees. And so when you're in this moment where you're doing things differently, and then you find that inspiration of like, it was my mom and my dad. Yeah, yeah. That's major feels, man. Yeah. Major feels.
Exploring the industries revolutionizing our world.
They're trying to create FOMO for their friends.
Yeah.
This is what today everything is about. You just put a regular steak on the table, they're not taking their phone out and filming that. You bring it out in a briefcase and you do a whole show and a shebang and dancers around it, and then you brand it with the Poppy Steak logo, they're taking out their phone.
And the it factor for me, for you, and I'll dive right into it right away is, to me, you made golf approachable.
So please, if you suffer from those three disasters, what you gotta do is you gotta make sure that you think. Lay hands, that's it.
The more you think about the result, less the reason why, the more it happens in a way that I've realized that ain't it, bro. I don't like that. I don't like, okay, I gotta do this and I gotta do that. No. I'm gonna do what I love to do and what makes me feel great, because I know I'm aligned with my destiny the more I do that.
Tech, retail, hospitality, fintech, AI, no sector is safe.
We want to get to know these people. And so these conversations are conversations that we want to have, and the audience gets to come along with us.
Just said fall seven times, rise eight.
I just had a short circuit.
All right, you know what I'm saying? I'm keeping a little Asian here.
Thank you for that.
A little
Asian, but a lot street. Look at that hoodie, bro. Yeah, you came correct.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
The Disruptors, from the Fountain Blue Las Vegas Resort.